Hey everybody, this is the Longhorn Confidential for March 19th. We're actually taping this on March 18th, which you'd know if you watched our Longhorn Confidential March Madness preview because we're all wearing the exact same clothes. But spring football gets underway today over at on the 40 Acres, so we're here to talk about it. Danny Davis, the Austin American Statesman, joined by Cedric Golden, Kirk Bowles, Thomas Jones. It's been a couple of months since we last saw the Longhorns leave the field at the Superdome in New Orleans after which kind of a historic season, a first ever appearance in the college football playoffs, but they still fell 2 wins short of the national championship. So let's talk about what the Longhorns have to accomplish this spring. Thomas, in Sunday's paper, I believe it was, you had a lengthy kind of preview. You had 24 questions kind of breaking down things that were going on with spring football. But boiling it all down, what is one question that must be answered by the Longhorns this spring? We'll start with you and then go to Kirk and Sen.
Wow. Well, I think it's on defense. You have to do something to improve your pass defense. Simple as that. It was a Achilles heel for the defense all season. It cost the Longhorns a chance to play for a national championship because they allowed what, 430 yards passing to Michael Penix in Washington. You have to do something to fix that pass defense. Simple as that. And they have a lot of players back. But what can they do to not give up 400 yards against an elite passer? Because there's some elite passers in the SEC.
Kirk, you're a man that's been known to ask some questions in your career. What's one question that you need answered this spring?
Who's going to sack the quarterback? Okay. I mean, Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell were good. They flashed, but they weren't, somebody you had to game plan for. I want to see somebody come in, whether it's Trey Moore from UTSA, 22 career sacks, or Colin Simmons, the next A. Hill linebacker, defensive end. I'm looking for one of those to kind of juice up that pass rush, which would help the pass defense because TJ was dead on about how bad that defense was at the time. I mean, what did Michael Penix throw? 430 yards, whatever it was in New Orleans. So, got to fix that, and a healthy pass rush would do that.
Said,
who's going to replace the Fat Boys? The Fat Boys break up, and now this.
We're getting replaced there. I didn't know that.
Byron Murphy the second and T'Vondre Sweat don't live here anymore, guys. And they plug that middle. They were disruptive. They were athletic. They even scored a couple of touchdowns between them. I think that, we've been waiting on Alfred Collins for how long? 4 years now? Vernon Broughton. And you got a new cast of characters. Those guys were part of the rotation last year. But at money time, it was Murphy and Sweat. So they one or both of them's got to have a career year. Because you don't just replace two would-be first-round NFL draft picks overnight. I mean, that's a modern-day Sean Rogers Case Hampton that we witnessed. So I'm not saying that they need to play to that level, but they got to show more than they've shown in their stay here. They got to go from being rotational guys to mainline contributors up front. They need to be as good as they've ever been because I'm guessing that SEC offenses are going to try to run the football on the Longhorns. And who can blame them with those two guys gone?
I guess since we're all defense on this show, I'm going to go offense. It's what's next for Quinn? I mean, he is the quarterback of this football team. He showed flashes last year. He had some spectacular moments, including the Big 12 championship game. Opted to come back this year. Didn't want to go into the draft. Probably improve. Want to try to improve his stock. But what's next for him? Can he stay healthy for the entire season? Has he improved, certain aspects of the game? How does he look like physically? We talked a lot about the physical strides he made last offseason. What does he do this offseason? At some point, the arch question is going to be asked, whether it's by us, whether it's by the fans, whether it's by another media outlet, just because we can't help ourselves. And before anyone gets upset at home,
We don't care.
we know what our viewership numbers look like, and we know what they look like when Arch is mentioned. So we know that y'all care a lot about that young man as well, as much as the people in the media. But this is Quinn's team. He's QB1 going into the season. And it's going to be interesting to see how many strides he makes with a different cast of characters. He's not going to have Xavier Worthy to throw to. He's not going to have Adonai Mitchell. He's not going to have Jatavion Sanders. So he's going to have to, break in a new set of receivers and see where he can go, because this team is only going to go as far as the quarterback goes. And we'll see if him in year three and the Steve Sarkisian offense can make that leap and be the quarterback, the draft prospect, what everyone expected him to be when he transferred from Ohio State. Because while he has shown some flashes since he got here, he has not been that guy we all thought he was going to be. We think he can get there, but it's just a matter of whether he can. And I think we're going to get some of those questions answered this spring. We know who Quinn is. We know who Alfred Collins is. We know who Ethan Burke is. But there's some newcomers on this team. Which newcomer are you looking forward to seeing the most during our little 15 to 20 minute windows at practice or during the spring game next month? Sed, we'll start with you.
Alan Simmons. I was able to watch him on television, state championship, but also I got to watch him live. And my nephew's Hutto Hippos were served up to Duncanville in the first round on the road. And Colin Simmons looked like Lawrence Taylor out there. And yeah, we were just glad that Darian was able to make it back to Hutto in one piece, because he plays offense. And so I think that he could be an immediate contributor in the pass rush. We saw Ethan Burke have his moments last year, guys. He had some moments. But if you put this Colin Simmons, if he is good as we think he is, and he's ready to contribute like Anthony Hill did and Ethan Burke did, you put those three youngsters in a rotation with Baron Sorrell and pass rushing downs, those numbers are going to go up, those sack numbers. And I know I keep bringing it up. They haven't had a double-digit sack master since 2013, Jackson Jeffcoat. That's the equivalent of someone asking you, when is the last time you had some Wolf brand chili? It's been too long. It's been too long. It's time for them to increase those sack numbers. And I think Colin Simmons is going to come in and give them five or six sacks this year as a freshman.
Shout out Corsicana. Thomas, who's your pick?
You know, we've talked about the revamp receiving core. You have Matthew Golden coming in from U of H, Isaiah Bond from Bama. I want to see that freshman, Ryan Wingo. He's a five-star kid from St. Louis, 6'2", 205, 206, I think UT lists him at. He's a big kid. Can he adapt to this level of football immediately? You know, and we'll get an idea of that in spring football. And if he does, if he adapts quickly, he's going to give UT that big physical downfield threat that maybe they're missing without AD Mitchell. So I want to see how Wingo does, you know, in the spring.
Kirk?
Right position, different player. I'm looking for Isaiah Bond to step up and see if he's the real alpha dog that they're going to be missing in Mitchell and Worthy. I mean, Worthy, 26 career touchdowns. I mean, amazing. AD Mitchell, one drop and 86 targets last year. And the guy Quinn Ewers was looking for in the end zone on the last three plays of the game, not Worthy. So, you know, Isaiah Bond did it. He showed up in big moments. He ran the Gravedigger play, fourth and 31 to beat Auburn. So
you got to send somebody on that.
Well, they rushed two, and they didn't even rush them. They just kind of stood there. So, you know, and Matthew Golden, the transfer from Houston, I think he's going to be electrifying a kick returner, but he's probably a slot guy, maybe take over Jordan Whittington's place. And Bolden, the shorter Oregon State receiver, who also could be the slot guy. But I think, you know, before we expect Wingo, you know, to take over, I mean, look at Jonte Cook and DeAndre Moore. You know, Moore barely got on the field. Cook had, what, one catch? Maybe. So I think it's expecting too much from Wingo, but I too want to see him, TJ. But Isaiah Bond's my guy. I want to see if he's as good as advertised.
I'm going to stick with the wide receivers, but side with Thomas on this one. in part because I want to see how these young guys grow up in this set of experienced transfers they brought in. I think off the top, you think it's going to be Silas Bolden, you think it's Matthew Golden, you think it's Isaiah Bond, you know, that Texas trots out for game one. But I want to see if Ryan Wingo can make his name. I want to see if Jonte Cook and DeAndre Moore, even though they're not newcomers, have grown up a little bit in the offseason and kind of developed into those four-star receivers that Texas, thought they were getting when they signed. We saw a little bit of Jonte last year. DeAndre just couldn't break into playing time because there was a lot of good receivers in front of him. But I want to see what those kids have. And I think that starts with Ryan. They have a couple other four-star receiving talents that they brought in. So I want to see what the young guys have. We know what the older vets have. We know what the transfers have because we can see their tape. I want to see what these new kids have and see if they can break into that starting lineup or that rotation sooner rather than later, because those are talented players, but they have some competition because Sark brought in some good talent through the transfer portal this offseason. It seems like we mentioned a lot of wide receivers, so maybe that's the answer, but what's the best position battle in spring that you're looking to kind of see get sorted out? Seth, we'll start with you.
You know, I was going to go receiver, but we spent a lot of time on it. So I'm going to look at these running backs, CJ Baxter and Jaden Blue. They combined for about 1,100 yards last season. Texas is going to need them to combine for about 1,700 or 1,800. CJ won the job this time last year. And then Jonathan Brooks said, hold your horses. You don't know what you don't know. Jonathan Brooks was the truth. I like what I see out of CJ. Jake Blue is scary fast. He is scary fast. He's got the quick twitch, but I kind of like what I saw from CJ. I know he had some ankle problems, at several points of the year, but I love the way he ran between the tackles. He averaged 4.8 a carry. That's respectable in college. We'll take that all day long. 138 carries to Jaden Blue, 65. The workload's going to go up with both of those guys, and I don't even know if it matters who starts because they're going to really need them both. But I just think CJ Baxter is a better table setter than Jaden Blue, and at times Texas had to be station to station that offense, and I think he fits better for what they're doing long term with Jaden Blue being the big play guy.
Kirk, who do you got?
Defensive tackle, as Sid mentioned earlier, it's like, boy, SEC is a line of scrimmage conference. And, boy, you'd better be able to run the ball and stop the run. And that was the luxury that Texas had last year because they had a top 15, top 10 run defense and a good third down defense. But, you know, you just kind of went into the game knowing teams couldn't run on Texas. And now it's time for Alfred Collins to step up. It's time for a Jare Bledsoe, a Vernon Broughton, Aaron Bryant, you know, been around a little bit. So it's time for one of them to take the reins, if not two of them, ideally, and show that, okay, we're not going to have a huge drop-off. You know, last year, that Bijan Robinson guy wasn't there anymore, and everybody felt like, oh, the sky is falling. Well, didn't even drop any, much less fall, because, you know, Jonathan Brooks was the star. There was no drop-off, and now Jonathan Brooks, the top running back prospect in this year's NFL draft. So, you know, replacing Sweat and Murphy is just a critical, critical priority for Coach Sarkisian this spring.
EJ?
Position battles. Can we talk about Arch and Quinn?
No.
Okay. Hell yeah. Go ahead.
So.
Don't run from
that. Look, we've talked about the pass defense, and they brought in, you know, they brought in some talent. There's a lot of young guys, and you have Andrew Makuba coming in from Clemson, who's been a, what, three-year starter for a high-level program. Some of these guys aren't going to get as much playing time. Is Michael Taft going to be – is he going to be a starter with Makuba coming in? Derek Williams going to be a sophomore. He had a really good freshman year. Jelani McDonald is coming up. At cornerback, Gavin Holmes, Terrence Brooks, Malik Muhammad, I think has star potential. So to see how that rotation in the secondary plays out, I think it's going to be really fun. I think to use, recruiting parlance, they're trying to recruit over certain guys. So we'll see how that competition plays out in the spring.
Andrade's back.
Andrade Barron is your lock. You know what you're getting with Jahdae Barron. You know, and he's kind of going to be the leader of that whole crew, I think. But it's a lot of players in that secondary.
I'll agree with Kirk and just slightly add, we also have to remember Bo Davis isn't there anymore. They have a new defensive line coach. Bo did a spectacular job in his 3 years at Texas, and so it's going to be interesting to see how Kenny Baker kind of molds these defensive linemen who need to replace Byron Murphy, who need to replace Tavondre Sweat. So that's kind of a position battle and storyline, I guess, I'm paying attention to this fall, just how those guys in the middle form under this new assistant coach. So that's my interest there. Before we get out of here, early expectations for this Texas team. Is it too early to start planning our trip to the SEC championship game, or is what are you expecting from this Texas team throughout this spring and going into the fall? Kirk, we'll start with you.
Well, I think a lot of people have them listed as co-favorites with Georgia, and it's going to be an angry Georgia team, after missing the playoffs, after being a two-time defending champion. And we get to see them come in Austin, so that's going to be one delicious ball game and one great Saturday and a whole lot of great Saturdays. So I think Texas is positioned better in football than maybe any other sport, except maybe volleyball.
I was about to say, get it right.
Going into the SEC. I mean, nobody compete with Jared Elliott's bunch. That's why he's got the big bucks now. But, I mean, 4 out of 5 offensive line starters back. You got a 2-year starter back at quarterback. You got tons of wide receivers to pick from. You got a new linebacker and tight end from Alabama. TJ just listed, what do they got, 12 cornerbacks? Trying to be two starters there. So,
14.
And you got a lot of exciting players coming in, like Ryan Wingo and Colin Simmons. So I think they're just positioned great. I expect them to be a top 5 national team when the polls come out in August. So
What about the end of the year? Where do you expect them to be?
Right there. And back in the Final Four. Oh, Final 12.
Wow.
That's right. You got a much better chance of making that field of 12 than you do with 4.
TJ?
Yeah, to Sark's credit, Sark and his staff have raised the standards now. And look, Texas has to get to that 12-team CFP. I mean, that's the expectation. I think with the new reality of college football, they could absorb a loss or even 2 losses and still get to the playoff as long as you're playing good football in November, December. And you're healthy. I think that's the expectation. I agree with Duck. I think they'll be playing for an SEC title. But even if they're not, again, you lose a couple of games, you're probably still in that top 12. And I think Texas has all the pieces to make a run at a national championship. And it starts with, as you mentioned earlier, Quinn Ewers. You have a 3-year starter. You have a lot of veterans. So the expectation, I think, is a championship.
So championship. I like what y'all have said. I really think they need to win in Michigan to make sure that they're going to be okay for that 12-team CFP. That's a early momentum starter for them to go up to the big house and get a W over a Michigan team that's lost its head coach, its running back, its quarterback. So that's a Michigan team in transition. That might be there for the taking. So I think they win that game. They beat Oklahoma. That's always a must. And then I think they're in really, really good shape. Georgia, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. It's Georgia. But the schedule itself is not daunting. If you beat Michigan, the schedule's not daunting. They should be in that CFP. They should be a 10-2, 11-1 type team this season. With what they have coming back. No one says it's going to be easy, but they have the talent. Sark's culture is working. And at the most important part, keep 3 healthy. He can't miss 3 games this season. He misses 3 games this season. Maybe Arch is ready, but he can't keep missing games. They're going to need him to go wire to wire to maximize their chances of making it back to the national semis.
Yeah, I think the expectations is this team is a top five team in the preseason polls, pretty much across the board. This team is a playoff team, especially if it's expanding to 12 teams. It's going to be interesting to see where they kind of fall in the SEC and kind of what their perception going into SEC play is. It's a little different now. They're going to have a different role. You know, they've been for so long the hunted, the team that everyone in the Big 12 hated, the horns down wherever they went, the most reviled, you know, team in the conference, even though Oklahoma was leaving too. Now they're kind of just another team in the SEC. I mean, I don't think Georgia hates Texas. I don't think LSU hates Texas. I mean, these are teams that have won championships and are competing for national championships. You know, these, you know, Georgia, when they play Texas, they're playing it because they're trying to get in the playoffs. When Texas plays Kansas State, that's Kansas State Super Bowl. So it's going to be a little different, I think, from a perception standpoint going into the season. It'll be interesting to see if Texas, how Texas handles, I guess, being the hunters as opposed to the hunted. But they're still going to be a team that's going to be a playoff contender. I don't know if they're a championship contender yet. We're going to need to see how this defense takes form over the next couple of months, but they're definitely going to be in the mix. And this is going to probably be a top 10 matchup when we head up to Ann Arbor in September.
Daniel, those horns down will travel.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted. Those horns down are going to be just as prevalent in the SEC.
They're going to travel because people know it triggers Texas fans, but I don't think Georgia has Texas circled on their calendar. I know Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech definitely had, you know, Texas circled on their calendars. I just don't think that's going to be the case in the SEC, but that could be just my opinion.
I agree with Danny. There's three teams in the SEC that hate UT right now. Three. And when you were in the Big 12, you had, you know, 12.
Hey, they'll grow to hate
Texas. Texas kicked Kirby Smart's ass in the Sugar Bowl.
They didn't care about that game. Remember, Cedric? They didn't care about that game.
They sure cared in the days leading up. They didn't care after they got beat. Evander Holyfield's son told me, we're taking them to the 15th round.
Georgia fans would rather beat Florida than Bama.
And they got knocked out in the 10th.
I just think if you ask a Georgia fan, who would they rather beat? As Thomas said, they're going to list three or four teams before they get to Texas. And I don't even think that's close.
But they don't want to come in here and hand it to the horns their first year in the SEC. You know they do.
They want to initiate.
That's also because they're chasing a championship. They want to win that game so they can, you know, position themselves. But this is not a Texas Tech. Texas Tech beats Texas, Joey gets an extension.
Yeah, if Georgia beats Texas,
Kirby Smart gets a pat on the back and get back to work, Kirby. That's it's different.
That's true. That's true.
They'll grow to hate Texas very quickly, I think.
But we're going to wrap it up. I believe if you want more football content, Kirk and Sed talked about spring football on their On Second Thought podcast last week. So check out statesman.com to hear all of their thoughts about that. And we'll have content from Tuesday and Thursday. That's when the horns are practicing this week. Pro Day's on Wednesday, so we'll be out there at that as well. So statesman.com for all that stuff. We'll be in and out throughout the spring talking on this podcast, On Second Thought podcast. So lots of stuff to listen to, but we appreciate y'all tuning in. For Kirk Sutton Thomas, I'm Danny. We'll see y'all later. Deuces.